They don't have the material.
I'm no lawyer, but I'm pretty sure that when suspects go on trial for crimes, they try not to commit more crimes. Donald Trump, however, is a different sort of criminal. For Trump, crimes are kind of like Lay's potato chips. Betcha can't do just one. But hey, you got to at least give Trump points for commitment. One crime isn't enough for him. He's always got to do like five at once. He's like a guy who steals a camcorder, sneaks into a movie theater without paying, illegally records it, sells the bootleg DVD on the street, gets arrested, busts out of jail, and then holds a screening of the movie in a house he broke into. For example, after Democrats led by Congressman Adam Schiff completed their arguments in the Senate impeachment trial last week, Trump decided to threaten Schiff, who, of course, is also one of the prosecutors in the trial. First, here's a brief excerpt of Schiff's detailed oral argument in which he laid out the case for removing Trump from office.
Can any of us really have the confidence that Donald Trump will put his personal interests ahead of the national interest? You know you can't count on him to do that. That's the sad truth. You know you can't count on him to do that. And you know, you can't trust this president to do what's right for this country. You can trust he will do what's right for Donald Trump. He'll do it now. He's done it before. He'll do it for the next several months. He'll do it in the election if he's allowed to.
It's true. Donald Trump has never done anything in his life that didn't benefit him personally. I'm pretty sure when he placed his hand on the Bible to take the oath of office, he slipped Chief Justice John Roberts a $20 bill. There's more where that came from, because I'm definitely going to get impeached. And that's why Schiff's oral argument was so important. He laid out in detail how our Constitution set up the presidency as a public trust, and that Trump had repeatedly violated that trust. And Trump clearly saw Schiff's speech, and he decided to menace Schiff on Twitter on Sunday.
Shifty Adam Schiff is a corrupt politician and probably a very sick man. He has not paid the price yet for what he has done to our country.
Okay, first of all, what do you mean he hasn't paid the price? Almost everything Trump says sounds like a deleted scene from The Irishman.
It's what it is.
Now, it seems like Trump was probably lashing out at Schiff after Schiff cited a report from CBS claiming that Trump had warned Senate Republicans, who were also supposed to be impartial jurors in the trial, not to cross him. Here's the CBS report, and then Schiff's comments citing that report.
One Trump confidant tells CBS News that GOP senators have been warned, vote against the president and your head will be on a pike.
CBS News reported last night that a Trump confidant said that GOP senators were warned, vote against your president, vote against the president, and your head will be on a pike. Now, I don't know if that's true.
I'm going to take a wild guess and say it's definitely true. Although, I will say the only thing that makes me doubt this story is the fact that Trump probably has no idea what a pike is. The only pike he's familiar with is the New Jersey Turnpike. I'm going to put your head on a pike, exit 15 by Secaucus. Then after Schiff made that comment, GOP senators feigned shock that he would suggest they might be beholden to a president who has routinely threatened anyone who crosses him. Senator John Barrasso said he has basically offended every Republican senator in there tonight. Senator Susan Collins said, I know of no Republican senator who has been threatened in any way by anyone in the administration. And Senator Lisa Murkowski said, I thought he was doing fine with moral courage until he got to the head on a pike. That's where he lost me. Oh, is that where he lost you? I was gonna vote to convict Trump, but then Schiff implied he was a bully, and that is where I draw the line. What's next? Is Schiff going to claim Trump's a golfer who stands like a mama bear scaring away a predator?
It was a perfect, beautiful call with Ukraine that had legs for days. I'd be dating that call if I wasn't already happily married to what's-her-name.
This whole impeachment is like a bad episode of Maury. There's all this evidence that Trump clearly cheated and Republicans are still like, but Maury, he loved me.
Ever since the impeachment inquiry began, I've been a prisoner. They tell me when to wake up, when to call into Fox and Friends, when to devour my dry-aged Kobe slop. So after the Senate convicts me, I might just wander the earth like a pariah, moving from barn to barn until some kid spots me and the town chases me out.
No! Sir, if you go down, then we all go down, and I don't want to share a prison cell with Rudy Giuliani.
Come on, Mr. President. Fight these airtight charges, please.
All right, I'll think about it.
A phone call rang out. A
then the president answered. It was Zelensky talking javelins, and someone wrote down a transcript of the president asking for an illegal favor. And now Nancy Pelosi's calling that impeachable behavior.
Whoa, why does Trump have to go?
Just because he committed the crimes and admitted the crimes doesn't mean he should go.
The opening arguments wrapped up today in Donald Trump's impeachment trial, and it's about damn time. Senators are exhausted from hours of not listening. All that's left is all the arguing, mostly about witnesses. Mitch McConnell doesn't want any. And it looked like all the Republicans were going to fall in line. Well, that got complicated.
And now a recording is surfaced of President Trump telling adult Cabbage Patch doll Lev Parnas that he wanted the former ambassador to Ukraine fired. Here is the audio.
The biggest problem there, I think, where we need to start is we got to get rid of the ambassador.
Get rid of her.
Hooray.
Well, that's
okay,
right.
Get her out tomorrow. Take her out. Okay? Excellent. Do it.
How is it possible that so many people have secret recordings of the president? I mean, this idiot has had more microphones and hidden cameras on him than Jim Carrey in The Truman Show. Michael Cohen had secret recordings of Trump. Omarosa had secret recordings of Trump. And now this guy. Trump was so worried about Obama spying on him, he failed to notice that everyone else was. This is why it's so crucial that the Senate vote to allow new evidence to be considered in the impeachment trial, because almost every day new evidence emerges. In fact, just last night, we got more bombshell reporting about a tell-all book being written by Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton. You might remember that according to witnesses, Bolton wanted no part of Trump and Rudy's Ukraine scheme, calling it a drug deal and saying Giuliani's a hand grenade who's going to blow everybody up. Now it turns out that in his forthcoming book, Bolton plans to lay out in detail that Trump told him explicitly that he wanted to hold up hundreds of millions of dollars in aid to Ukraine in order to force them to help him cheat in the 2020 election.
The New York Times reports that former National Security Advisor John Bolton's upcoming book will say the president personally tied aid to Ukraine to an investigation of the Bidens.
Banner headline of the New York Times, money to Ukraine tied to inquiries, Bolton book says. Washington Post led with it too. Manuscript leak spurs calls for Bolton testimony. Wall Street Journal, Bolton claim ties Trump to aid freeze. The Miami Herald, Trump tied Ukraine aid to inquiries that he sought, Bolton book says.
The New York Times, which carried the story describing the contents of former Trump National Security Advisor John Bolton's book manuscript. According to the New York Times, in the manuscript, John Bolton says that Donald Trump told him that he was holding back military aid to Ukraine to force Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden. In other words, John Bolton's book manuscript proves the accusations made in the first article of impeachment against Donald Trump.
It's insane. Every day, someone new comes forward with more evidence against Trump. Gordon Sondland, Lev Parnas, John Bolton. Tomorrow, the pilot on Air Force One is going to come forward and be like, the president ordered me to illegally park in a handicapped spot.
If a president, any president, were to have done what the Times reported about the content of the Bolton manuscript, that would not constitute an impeachable offense.
Are you kidding?
Well, if it doesn't matter that Trump did it, why have you wasted so much time and energy arguing that he didn't do it?
No one is above the law, not even the president of the United States.
No one is above the law.
But even the president of the United States sometimes must have to stand naked.
He never said to me, I've got a problem with what you are doing in Ukraine. Never once, never winked, never sent me a little note. He is a personal friend, I thought. So, here's the only conclusion I can come to, and it's a harsh one, and I feel very bad about it. He's a backstabber.
That's a serious thing.
It's not serious, it's true. If your friend was complaining about you behind your back and didn't have the guts to come up to your face and tell you, I think you're screwing up, Catherine, that'd be a backstabber.
The backstabbers.
Joining us now, Fox News contributor, former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., John Bolton.
Who better to bring in than American Enterprise Institute scholar, Ambassador John Bolton?
Ambassador Bolton, always good to see you.
Ambassador, good morning to you.
Good evening, Ambassador.
We love seeing you each and every day.
We heard from other people closely tied to the White House who said, look, John Bolton is simply trying to sell a book, and that's why the timing is so delicious.
There is nothing Bolton adds to the conversation.
The only reason anyone cares about what Bolton has to say is
because he was Trump's national security advisor, period.
John Bolton himself has been reduced to a tool for the radical Dems and the deep state.
The backstabbers.
I think anyone who knows John Bolton is celebrating because of his intellect, his capacity, his experience, his talent. John Bolton is one bright, highly knowledgeable individual who has the interest of this country and this president in mind every step of the way. John Bolton served this president well, and we thank him for his service.
The president and his cabal of thuggish goons have threatened everyone from ambassadors to members of Congress as new evidence emerges every day of his crimes, and Republicans are feigning false outrage at an innocuous comment by Adam Schiff just to distract from the actual case. If Trump had any shame at all, he'd resign and disappear someplace no one could find him.
Today's impeachment proceedings were such a disaster for the president that even I can see where this is heading. My loyalty is now for sale to the highest bidder. Phone lines are open. No opinion is too depraved.
So, for the resignation ceremony, I'm thinking sobbing masses here and here.
No, Mr. President, don't do it.
That reminds me. Let's have a guy wrapped in tinfoil show up, say he's from the future, and say my resignation leads to the end of mankind.
Uh-huh, and what are you thinking for the kids?
They can just catch a cab home.
Mr. President, you're not resigning. You're going to be acquitted by the Senate tomorrow.
Hello, Democrats have what many describe as a satanic orgy of evidence.
And the Republicans have a satanic orgy of votes, so we win.
So, if I'm reading this correctly, you don't care what I did?
I have not been following this case in the slightest. I've just been calling Republicans in the middle of the night breathing into the phone. They get it.
Danger. Danger. Danger.
Has the House of Representatives, with all due respect, in these two articles of impeachment, charged a crime or violation of established law or not.
Whether the president's actions are, in fact, grounds for an impeachment or some other sanction is a decision in the sole discretion of the Congress.
The profound danger that a presidential impeachment will be dominated by partisan considerations.
That the president has misused the privileges available to his high office.
Like war, impeachment is hell.
No one is above the law.
Question time. This is where senators say the same thing they've been saying for weeks, but this time in the form of a question.
This afternoon, in a stunning argument, one of President Trump's top lawyers claimed any president has almost unlimited power, that his election is in the public interest, and so he said Trump cannot be impeached.
Every public official that I know believes that his election is in the public interest. And if a president does something which he believes will help him get elected in the public interest, that cannot be the kind of quid pro quo that results in impeachment.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have finally arrived. First it was, there was no quid pro quo. Then it was, maybe there was a quid pro quo, but it was to help the country, not Donald Trump. And now it's like, hey, man, the Donald gonna do what the Donald gonna do. You little bitch asses need to shut the hell up. So just to be clear, the Trump team's argument is now that anything Trump does to get himself reelected is fine because his reelection in his mind is good for the country, and then it's not impeachable. Anything. Yeah, so Trump can collude, Trump can obstruct, and it's all good.
Danger. Danger. Danger.
Folks, I've been so concerned with weaving a fairy tale about how I'm the least criminal president in history that I forgot the facts. Specifically, Republicans have a Senate majority so I can get away with whatever I want. The end.
Dark and difficult times lie ahead. Soon, we must all face the choice between what is right and what is easy.
Each senator, when his or her name is called, will stand in his or her place and vote guilty or not guilty.
Guilty!
Despite every word out of my mouth before 2016, the president is an angel on earth. Not guilty!
Ted Cruz! Allow me to consult the Lord. Not guilty.
Senator Collins.
Voting for the
Senator.
Benuma.
A little clearer.
Benina.
Senator.
I'm a little girl. I can't vote. Tra-la-la-lay-lee-loo.
President Trump is a symptom of a larger problem with the system that I will now describe in detail.
We don't have time for this. We'll just mark down guilty.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Not guilty.
The president is a disgrace to the office, a blight on our nation's history, and an existential threat to democracy itself. Not guilty.
According to the tally on these articles of impeachment, the president is not guilty as charged.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God. I'm so happy.
It started in low, then it started to grow.
Did you hear that? They're celebrating my acquittal in the streets. I don't get it. The Democrats are happy?
We did it! We kind of held the president accountable. But most importantly, we showed that this story isn't over.
What is she talking about? Oh, yeah, the election.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
I'm
keeps me awake. The look on your face the moment you heard the news. You're screaming inside and frozen in time. You did all that you could do. The game was rigged. The ref got tricked. The wrong ones think they're right. You were outnumbered this time. Now you brace for the sound you've only heard on TV. You go to class scared, wondering where the best hiding spot would be. And the big bad man and his big bad clan, their hands are stained with red. Oh, how quickly they forget. They aren't gonna help us, too busy helping themselves. They aren't gonna change this.
No quid pro quo.
No one believes there are any quid pro quo.
And what we do know is there was definitely no quid pro quo.
There was no quid pro quo here whatsoever.
There was absolutely no quid pro quo.
There was absolutely no quid pro quo. The transcript backs it up.
The transcript of the president's phone call with President Zelensky, where there was no quid pro quo, there was no pressure.
There was no quid pro quo. There was no issue about finally getting the military assistance.
No quid pro quo, as Mr. Mulvaney said. No linkage whatsoever between any type of security assistance dollars for Ukraine and any type of investigation.
There was no quid pro quo in the phone conversation. So no doubt that the haters are going to hate.
People who are trying to imply that the president is asking for things or quid pro quos, I think this is ridiculous.
That he also mentioned to me in the past the corruption related to the DNC server. Absolutely. No question about that. But that's it. And that's why we held up the money. Now, there was a report.
So the demand for an investigation into the Democrats was part of the reason that he
it was
ordered to withhold
funding to Ukraine.
The look back to what happened in 2016 certainly was part of the thing that he was worried about in corruption with that nation. And that is absolutely appropriate.
Holding the funding.
Yeah.
But to be clear, what you just described is a quid pro quo. It is funding will not flow unless the investigation into the Democratic server happened as well.
We do that all the time. And we got nothing to be
sorry for. There was no quid pro quo. There was nothing.
Did he also mention to me in the past that the corruption related to the DNC server? Absolutely. No question about that.
There was no quid pro quo at all.
To be clear, what you just described is a quid pro quo.
We do that all the time with foreign policy.
There was no quid pro quo, unlike Biden.
That's it. And that's why we held up the money.
We are now getting our first look at new bombshell testimony in the House impeachment inquiry, and it reads like a roadmap for the apparent quid pro quo with Ukraine. The opening statement from Bill Taylor, the career diplomat. Right now, he's the current acting U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. Taylor testified that despite President Trump's denials, it was made very clear to him that the president was making both a White House meeting and that hundreds of millions of dollars in the military aid contingent on Ukraine publicly committing to investigate his political rivals.
Well, they blew up a chicken man in Philly last night. Now they blew up his house, too. Down on the boardwalk, they're getting ready for a fight. Gonna see what them racket boys can do. Now there's trouble busting in from out of state. And the DA can't get no relief. Gonna be a rumble out. Promenade and the gambling commission's hanging on by the skin of its teeth. Well, now everything dies, baby, that's a fact. But maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City. Got a job and tried to put my money away, but I got debts that no honest man can pay. So I drew what I had from the Central Trust, and I bought us two tickets on that close city bus. Now baby, everything dies, maybe that's a bet. But maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on. That's a fact, but maybe everything that dies.
I'm Emma.
I'm Kiana.
I'm Tanasia.
I'm Lila.
And I'm Badila.
And we're
the Perfect 10 After School.
And we love to be a part of WGXC Acra 90.7 FM, celebrating creative community radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Yay!
You are listening to WGXC.
Tune in at 6 p.m.
and at 7 o'clock a.m.
For All Together Now.
For local news.
The weather and school closing.
For interview with neighbors and friends.
And you might even hear us.
The Campaign Medium group on
All Together Now.
Together Now.
At 7 o'clock a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m.
on 90.7 FM.
And WJXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Catherine A. Lady of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to Transmission Arts Programming on WGXC 90.7 FM.
South Dakota's legislature threatens transgender youth. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast, this week podcasting from Park City, Utah. The latest anti-transgender state law in the country, South Dakota's HB 1057, sailed through the state's House of Representatives by a 2-1 margin Wednesday. The law criminalizes medical procedures intended to address gender dysphoria for people under the age of 16. According to the American Medical Association, gender dysphoria is, quote, an incongruence between anatomic sex and gender identity, unquote. When a person identified as a male or a female at birth is transgender, feeling they belong somewhere else along the male-female spectrum. The AMA estimates 0.6% of the population is transgender, and that this, quote, has been recognized and documented in human populations worldwide since antiquity, unquote. Failure to support transgender people, especially youth, can lead to a cascade of problems, from physical and mental health problems, self-harm, and being victimized by intense discrimination and violent crime, including murder. Nevertheless, the Republican majority in the South Dakota House, ignoring opposition from the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Medical Association, approved the bill. If it passes the South Dakota Senate and gets signed into law by the governor, transgender youth in South Dakota will suffer. Chase Strangio, the deputy director for transgender justice with the ACLU's LGBT and HIV project, told us shortly after the vote Wednesday, "It's hugely disappointing that HB 1057 overwhelmingly passed the South Dakota House. This measure," he said, "would criminalize life-saving care for trans youth and is a dangerous and misguided proposal that will cause serious harm and likely deaths across the state," he said. Quincy Park, a transgender youth from South Dakota, addressed the South Dakota House of Representatives earlier this week.
"Let me be clear. As someone who researched my own treatment options and someone who this bill would directly affect, what you're doing is not preventing harm. You're actively denying medical treatment to children who have such strong feelings of disconnect from their bodies that over half of them are or have been suicidal at some point in their lives."
Earlier in the month, HB 1057's sponsor, Republican House member Fred Deutsch from Florence, South Dakota, appeared on the radio program of evangelical Christian activist Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council. Deutsch said, "I've had family members killed in Auschwitz. I've seen the pictures of the bizarre medical experiments. I don't want that to happen to our kids," he said. Perkins, who's referred to being transgender as a perversion, didn't think it perverse to compare Nazi experiments to medical treatments fully endorsed by the AMA.
Just last week, a study came out documenting that the provision of this very care reduces suicidality in transgender young people.
That's Chase Strangio speaking on Democracy Now! Just before the South Dakota vote.
Now we have lawmakers disregarding science, disregarding the urgent needs of the trans community, and saying, we do not care that you might die. We are going to make your health care and indeed your life a crime.
The struggles faced by those in the transgender community, as well as their contributions to our society, have been a focus of this year's Sundance Film Festival. Yancey Ford, the first openly trans director to be nominated for an Oscar, and trans attorney Chase Strangio are both subjects of a remarkable new documentary called Disclosure, Trans Lives on Screen. The film received a rousing standing ovation at its premiere here, with its deep dive into Hollywood's long, complex, and evolving depiction of trans lives. Reacting to HB 1057 sponsor Fred Deutsch, Yancey Ford said on the Democracy Now! NewsHour,
"I was appalled to listen to a legislator who was claiming, under the auspices of protecting vulnerable children, to have the right to insert himself and his beliefs into life-saving medical treatment that is provided by, you know, professionals, doctors, actual people with actual medical training, science behind them, to provide children in South Dakota with gender-affirming treatment that, you know, children and their parents seek out. It never ceases to amaze me how determined people are to erase trans people, even when they're children. Like, I remember when I was 16, 15, 14, being fully aware of what I was dealing with. And if I had had those choices, if my parents had had those choices when I was that age, I would have had a different childhood."
If the South Dakota Senate passes the anti-trans bill, pressure will mount on Republican Governor Kristi Noem to veto it to avoid a costly court challenge and the potential of a financially devastating boycott of her state. And it's not just South Dakota Chase Strangio is worried about.
The bill in South Dakota is typical of one of two bills that we're seeing this year that have been introduced in over a dozen states.
In the midst of the South Dakota debate, Strangio tweeted, "The fact that Disclosure is premiering while HB 1057 is being debated is for me a reason to feel hope, even in these despairing moments." He concluded, "We'll keep claiming our right to tell our own stories and control our own bodies." From the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah, I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Hello, this is Rob Gellis with This Month in History, a chronicle of significant or infamous events in art, science, music, literature, sports, and more that occurred this month either in the near or distant past. On February 1, 1878, Hattie Carraway was born in Pacersville, Tennessee. She was the first woman elected to the United States Senate. On February 3, 1870, the 15th Amendment to the Constitution was ratified, guaranteeing the right of citizens to vote regardless of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. On February 6, 1788, Massachusetts became the sixth state to ratify the U.S. Constitution. On February 8, 1910, the Boy Scouts of America was founded by William Boyce in Washington, D.C. On February 12, 1809, Abraham Lincoln was born in Hardin County, Kentucky. He was the 16th President of the United States. On February 14, 1849, photographer Matthew Brady took the first photograph of a U.S. president in office, James Polk. On February 19, 1942, the internment of Japanese Americans began after Franklin Roosevelt issued an executive order. Over 110,000 people were forced into relocation camps in the Southwest. On February 22, 1732, George Washington was born in Westmoreland County, Virginia. He served as the commander of the Continental Army during the American Revolution and later became the first U.S. president. On February 24, 1867, the House of Representatives voted to impeach President Andrew Johnson. However, the effort to remove him from office failed in the Senate by just one vote. On February 26, 1848, the pamphlet, The Communist Manifesto, was published by two socialists, Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. It called for the abolition of all private property and a system in which workers would own all the means of production, factories, land, and machinery. On February 28, 1844, an explosion of one of the guns aboard the USS Princeton naval ship killed several top American officials and narrowly missed killing U.S. President John Tyler. On February 29, 1739, Anne Lee was born in Manchester, England. Known as Mother Anne, she emigrated with a handful of followers to the United States in 1774 and founded the religious group, the American Society of Shakers. You've been listening to This Month in History, a monthly broadcast of historic events on WGXC 90.7 FM. If you have an event that you'd like to hear included in This Month in History, email me, Rob Gellis, at info@wgxc.org.
Here's Brian Eno with St. Elmo's Fire.
Tired. We had walked and we had scrambled through the moors and through the briars, through the endless blue meanders. In the blue August noon, in the cool August noon, over the nights and through the fires, we went surging down the wires, through the towns and on the highways, through the storms in all their thundering. In the cool August noon, in the cool August noon, then we rested in a desert where the bones were white as tin sun, and we saw St. Elmo's fire splitting irons in the ether.
We just heard two songs from Brian Eno, Signals from his 1983 album Apollo, and No One Receiving from the 1977 album Before and After Science. You're listening to new music on WGXC and Wave Farm Radio from Brian Eno. This is The Ship.
The ship was from a willing land. The waves about it rolled. And as a globe of powder sand, we lift, we lose, we hold. The time is still, the sky is young.